This episode is brought to you by PwC. When unprecedented times are all the time, it's time to start walking the talk. Leaders like you turn to PwC to see and stay ahead. Upskill your workforce, use intelligent automation, and transform big ideas into breakthrough reinvention. Explore the human-led, tech-powered solutions that help you reinvent. It's all part of the new equation. Learn more at pwc.com.
This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
This is an ESPN special report. Now reporting.
Peter Rosenberg!
ESPN's at 6.
When the clock struck 6, it meant one thing.
I'm one of the greatest broadcasters on planet Earth.
And I know that's hearsay here. It's
not hearsay, it's not heresy. Hearsay.
Now, from the ESPN New York news desk, here's
Rosenbaum or whatever that guy's name is.
No wonder your show is number one.
Let's have some fun. Ty Butler in for Peter Rosenberg on a Monday edition of ENN. Thank you, Don. By the way, guys, head to Twitter. You can follow me at Ty D. Butler. Hit me on Instagram as well, at Ty D. Butler. But we start.
Yeah, start following the guy.
Let's do it.
What is it? Because I know I follow you.
Of course you do, because you're a great man.
So what is it? Give it again.
Ty D. Butler, TyDButler on Twitter and Instagram.
So what we're going to do is we're going to take a look at it now. You've got 2,075 followers.
Not that many compared to you.
So at Ty D. Butler, TyDButler. I want that up by the end of ENN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
To be at 2,500.
Wow.
So let's do it. Let's start following Ty. The kid's a talent, seriously. He's a big Laker fan.
Big
Yankee fan.
Holy crap.
He knows his stuff. He's an up-and-coming talent. Take a look at it on Yes. The guy's got the look. He's going to be doing SportsCenter, and we're going to be on this little yo-yo show saying, boy, I knew Ty when.
Wow.
So you could say, you know what? I was following him back when he's got 2.5 million followers in a couple of years, you're going to be able to say to yourself, you know what? I was there when he had less than 2,500.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
So I'm going to keep refreshing. You do what you do. And let's see if we can get some people to follow you. Already up to 290. All right? Just like that, we got 15. So let's go.
This is why you are who you are, my friend. I would argue, and this is with all due respect to everyone else who works on the show, you probably have the highest public approval rating. Would you say that that's the case?
That's for other people to say.
People love them some Don
McGregor. But I do appreciate you saying that. Thank you.
Let's start with the pleasantries. Good evening to Don.
You're bad at football.
One more good evening to Don.
I've twisted myself into a pretzel.
How about good evening to Mr. Steve Young?
Don, you're the best.
I got to say, Don, I'm looking at this shot of you on Yes, and it took me about 45 minutes to ponder this, but I think I like the cut. It might not be the right take, but I think it's my take. I like the haircut, buddy.
It's getting crazy, but I love it. And you know what? I really have to thank everybody on Twitter for not complaining about my eye. It looks disgusting, but I did have cataract surgery back last Wednesday. But nobody's made fun of it. Nobody said, what's wrong with Don's eye? I kind of look like I'm cross-eyed, but it's just it's the blood. They call it a hickey when you get the laser and then they do the cataract. So what? I appreciate that.
Yeah, the hair looks fantastic. It's a great – I don't know if I could pull that off, but you're certainly doing wonders, my friend.
Well, thank you.
All right, let's get to the story from yesterday. The Giants losing to the Eagles 34-10, but that was not what everyone was talking about. It was the fact that Adam Schefter reported – this organization is leaning toward bringing back both Judge and Jones for the 2022 season. So a couple of excerpts from the article. The Giants believe that both Judge and Jones deserve the opportunity to demonstrate their talents next season. They are expected to have difficult conversations with multiple members of the organization in an attempt to diagnose all that has gone wrong in recent seasons. And Joe Judge will be a key part of those conversations. Joe Judge, after that loss to the Eagles, was not, you know, really entertained by this conversation and didn't really want to answer questions about his job.
I'm never going to comment on anything hypothetically about jobs, mine or anybody else's. I appreciate the question. I understand what you guys are asking. It doesn't matter if you're asking about me, Pat Graham, Jerry Schaplinski, Jerome Henderson. I'm just telling you, like, I'm never going to comment on that in a press conference, guys. I appreciate what you have to ask. Completely understand it. Just understand the way I'm going to answer the question.
Is there a case, Don, to be made for Joe Judge deserving another season?
I don't think you can make the case he's deserving. I think you can make the case that because of the last couple of years with the injuries at quarterback, because of the embarrassment of having to let go of McAdoo and Shurmur after 2 years, that there's a chance that because of that he'll come back. But honestly, how do you say he's doing a good job? How do you say that? You're a big football guy. Wouldn't you say that football, out of all the four major sports, is more driven by coaching?
Oh, absolutely, without question.
And you're talking about a guy that over 2 years, 16 games his first year, and then it'll be 17 games this year, and you end up winning 10 games. But when I hear leaning, here's my bold prediction, Ty. I think if they lose these next two games, especially if they lose them the way they've lost the last couple, just not competitive, I think Judge will be fired. I can't say the same for Jones because there's a lot of moving parts with that. They don't have to give him the fifth year. They can wait it out, let him play next year without giving him the fifth year option, just to give one more year to check it out. So I'm not going to speak with conviction about Jones, but if they lose the next two, and they very well could, Chicago's playing pretty decent football, and then Washington may need that game to get into the playoffs. We'll see. I think that Mara will cave and change his mind and fire.
And that would be the right decision to make, because I don't know that you can pigeonhole your next GM, assuming Gettleman is let go or he steps down or whatever the case may be. You're now going to limit your options because this new guy won't be able to, in year one, pick his head coach. And I don't think that you've seen anything from Judge on his resume that would suggest he should come back. The Giants ranked 30th in offense this year. We're going to be some smash-mouth football team, reminiscent of the good old days. Well, the last three games, that smash-mouth football team has surrendered 30 points per game. They play hard for him. As you mentioned, they're 10-21 in the two seasons, so there's really nothing on his resume that would show he deserves to come back. And my prediction is if they do bring him back, we're going to be at they're going to be at week 9 next year when the Giants are 3-6, and we're going to be having the same conversation about Joe Judge, him being on the hot seat, and leading to him being fired.
Well, like I said earlier in the show, if you bring in a general manager from the outside, then that general manager go, okay, I'll keep Joe Judge, and then you get off to a 1-5 start, he's going to say, I'm bringing in my guy. So I'm sure they'll yes John Mara to death and say, okay, we'll bring Joe Judge back, but he's going to be on a very, very short leash.
By the way, I'm sorry, go ahead.
And that's the one thing that's happened with this organization, Ty, is they get off to brutal starts. So it's not that crazy to think you're going to be 1-5 again.
I think I saw this a couple of weeks ago. They haven't been over 500 since the 2016 season.
That's right. They have been at 500, obviously, but not above. Think about that. You're talking about five seasons. Not played a single game as a winning team. Have been brutal at home. They have. If they don't score 30 points, I think the last time they scored 30 points, Ty, was at the end of the 2019 season. So they will. If they don't score 30 in the next two, they'll go two full seasons without eclipsing 30 points in a league where you accidentally stumble into. It's like you get 200 points for getting your name correct on the SATs. It's almost like in the NFL, you're like spotted 14 points. Like, no matter how bad you are, you should be able to get a couple of touchdowns. You should be able to score at least double digits, and they can't get to 30. Not once in 2 years? And I doubt they'll score 30 in the next two, not with the quarterbacks that they have in play here.
Fromm and Glennon. Yeah, it's like it's never been easier. With the rule changes, it's never been easier to score in the league. And with adding the playoff spot, it's never been easier to make the playoffs. And here we have the Giants, who, you know, can't score 30. And, you know, they were officially eliminated from the playoffs. How about this, Don? Coming into that game yesterday at 4-10, they were still alive for the playoff in the NFC. Here's what they needed to have happen. They needed to win out. The Eagles needed to lose out. Washington losing to Dallas. New Orleans losing out. Atlanta losing two games. Minnesota losing out. Carolina losing at least once to Tampa Bay. And Seattle losing at least once. FPI gave them a 1 in 75,000 right. chance to make the playoffs.
Well, the idea, just after you're done with winning out, don't even bother reading the rest of the paragraph.
Because they weren't going to do
that. They weren't going to be winning out.
There was a football team who did win yesterday here in New York, and that would be the New York Jets. But here is how you know, and I'm a Jet fan, you're in an unhealthy relationship. You experience success, and half of the fan base is annoyed by it. And I'm talking about the team going out there, putting a representable four quarters together, getting a win, and somehow, because you've kind of mortgaged your draft positioning, people are annoyed and upset. With them doing that, because essentially they've clinched themselves out of getting the number one pick. Right now, if you look at the standings, they would be four. So you have Jet fans who say, listen, it's not about winning right now. You got to capitalize on high draft capital. And because they didn't do that yesterday, because they went out there and won that game, now you're going to be picking fourth if the season were to have ended today.
Progress is only shown by results. Wilson could have had the exact same game that he had yesterday. And the defense give up the touchdown at the end, and you lose the game, and it's not going to feel the same because the room is going to be all down, and then Wilson's going to have to talk about yet another loss instead of talking about the great touchdown run and then the quarterback rating and all the things that are making you believe that he could be that quarterback. The conversation would have been, you just lost to the worst team in football in your own building. Losing is a disease that just creeps in to the soul of these players. And fans can't understand it, but the work that goes in. But how do you say you love your team, Ty? And then look at the celebration in the locker room after the game. And look at Middleton talking to the team and feeling good for him. Longtime assistant, getting to be a head coach for the first time and winning the game. And then Robert Saleh on the monitor afterwards talking to the players and them celebrating. And call yourself a Jet fan and not feel good. I know a lot of these players are going to be gone. I know a lot of these players you never heard of because they're only playing because of the COVID situation, but they're wearing the uniform that you love. You're wearing, they're representing the team that you care about, and you don't feel good for them?
Yes.
You're rooting against that happening?
I can't relate to that. As you mentioned, you don't need the good organizations don't need the number one overall pick to draft high impact players. If you know what you're doing, you should be able to scout your way into finding gems in the draft. You're still going to have, and look, thanks to that, you know, trade with the Seahawks for Jamal Adams, right now you've got two of the top seven picks in the draft. You're not beating the Bucs next week. You're not going to beat the Bills. In all likelihood, you're not going to win those games. So it's probably the last win of the season. And, you know, kudos to them for going out there and getting that W. Because to your point.
I love Eli Manning. But in 2004, Philip Rivers, Eli Manning, Ben Roethlisberger, who was the better quarterback of the three?
Who's the better quarterback of those three?
Yeah.
Overall, I mean, most people would say Big Ben, but...
All right. And Big Ben was taken third of the three.
Yeah.
All right. Who's the better quarterback? Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, or Josh Allen?
Josh Allen.
All right. Who was taken last in those three?
Yeah.
You know, we flip out about trying to get the guy. For all we know, Justin Fields 10 years from now is going to be the best quarterback. Maybe right now it looks like it's Mac Jones because he's the only one that's going to be going to the playoffs, possibly, of the quarterbacks that were drafted in this draft. Now, the jury's still very much out. We haven't even finished their rookie seasons yet. Yeah. And that's quarterbacks. But I'm supposed to root against the Jets if I'm a Jet fan, hoping that I grab another player outside of a quarterback. When you look at Parsons, who's probably the best player in the NFL right now, is taking 12th overall.
Yeah,
I mean, you got I can go chapter and verse. Terrell Davis, Hall of Fame running back for the Denver Broncos, taken in the 7th round.
Mahomes, yeah. Rodgers, Brady, Russell Wilson,
Joe Montana. Just the list goes on and on. So you're begging to move up, and you don't know all these. Listen, I'm not the biggest college football fan in the world, so I'm kind of talking out of my you know what, because I'm sure there's a lot of fans out there listening to watch like every play, and they're like Mel Kiper Jr., and they know all the players out there. But God, to me, it's just too much of a crapshoot. Yeah. It just is, and so much can happen. And so many players get drafted, and not all of them are the first overall pick or the second overall pick, and some of them not even drafted.
Yeah, and to your point earlier about what the conversation would have been today if the Jets had blown the lead, it's, you know, on their final offensive possession, they get a goal-to-goal situation, and they were unable to punch it in. So now you're impugning what the offense was able to do on that possession that allowed Jacksonville to still be in the game. But yeah, we talked earlier about Dan Grasso being on the call, he filling in for Bob Wischusen. Here is what the Zach Wilson 52-yard touchdown sounded like.
So four receivers for the Jets on 3rd and 5 from their own 48. Mims goes in motion. Wilson in the shotgun. You got Michael Carter as the lone setback. Wilson takes the snap. Jaguars come with a blitz. Here they come. Wilson eludes the rush. He's going to take off. He's got plenty of running room, and he's going to scamper for a big game. 30, 25, still in bounds at the 20. Makes a miss at the 10. He could go. Wilson dives. Touchdown. Touchdown, New York Jets. Zach Wilson on a 55-yard scamper. Breaking tackles, staying in bounds, and just like that, the Jets are on the board.
All right, here's what's great about that call. And listen, I'm no, you know, Al Michaels, but I'm a fan, so I kind of know what a good call sounds like. Howard David told me this a long time ago. He's like, if you're going to get a good play-by-play guy, can't be at 10 the whole game. Because then you got nowhere to go. So you got to be able to go to 10 when it's deserved to go to 10, and you stay at 5 when it deserves to be at 5, and you're at 3 when it deserves to be 3. On that call, he raises his voice in excitement when he breaks free. Then he settles it in when he's at the sidelines, because at any moment he can go out of bounds. Right, Ty?
Yeah. And it looked
and
like he almost
raises
did.
It again when he doesn't go out of bounds. And then settles it back down again, only to raise it again when he makes that one last move so that he can now call the touchdown. So it was exactly how it should be called. If he's at 10 the whole way, that's too much. But that way it was able to build into three different crescendos. The immediate breakthrough, the play at the sideline, and the second play at the sideline into the end zone. That's a good call for a guy that's never done it before. Take a bow, my friend.
How about this? It's clearly a team that hasn't done a lot of winning in the last decade. So he's on the call for a win with that as a highlight, and it came down to the final possession. So now he gets to go to Bob Wischusen, who we hope is feeling okay. And, you know, he was on the pregame show yesterday. Sounds like he's on the other side of things. He gets to go to Bob Wischusen and say, hey, my friend, I've got a better winning percentage than you this year. I'm going to finish 1-0, batting 1,000.
All right, and this was, and you football fans will appreciate this, and this is going to happen to Dan, which I hope he appreciates. Is you grow up watching Inside the NFL. I kind of lost interest once it went to Showtime. I don't know. It's not the same as it was when I was growing up on HBO, but still. I called a couple of Jet games, not full games, but a couple of series at the end of the first half and the beginning of the second half when I was doing the pre and post for the Jets because Bob would have to go downstairs for whatever a ceremony. Would happen. So I did get to call some games, and I called a touchdown. It's the only time I called a touchdown. So my thinking is, when they show the highlights and Inside the NFL, they're going to use my call. But they didn't. I don't know why, but they didn't. And I was disappointed. They're going to use his call. That's the highlight of the game, even though it was a meaningless game as far as the standings were concerned. It was a great game. So when they do inside the NFL, and it's only the longest run for a touchdown any quarterback has had in Jets history. So you're going to hear that call is going to live in infamy.
It will. So great job, Dan. We love you, buddy.
Part of forever.
You are part of forever, as the great Michael Kay said when he was doing that Corey Kluber no hitter.
Again, follow at Ty D. Butler.
That's T-Y-D.
B-U-T-L-E-R. I want to try to get him to 2,500 by the end of ENN. We're at 2,339.
Wow, we're making some progress. What a guy, Don. All right, some updated NFL odds to win the MVP courtesy of Caesars Sportsbook.
Okay.
Rodgers, now heavy favorite, minus 170, followed by Brady at plus 650. Jonathan Taylor, Mahomes, and Josh Allen round out the list. I would say, Don, you'd have to think that barring some epic meltdown against the Vikings and Lions to end the season, this is his MVP to lose. You look at his last five games, 16 yeah. touchdowns to no picks. He's had one bad game this year, and it was week one against the Saints. All he's done since then is 33 touchdowns to two interceptions. I mean, he's been incredible, completing nearly 70% of his passes. He's been unbelievable.
And you mentioned, where was Taylor? Third?
Taylor's third at plus 700.
Deserving. Tremendous year. God, people are sleeping on the Colts, and I include myself. Like, you ask people who are the best teams in the NFL, I don't think anybody would mention the Colts.
Well, because and I think that's the reason. We're talking about Jonathan Taylor being their best player. Is there a team that we can take seriously? Like, in this era of football, when your best players are running back, because we look at the quarterbacks
outside of Tennessee, and they didn't even have him for half the year.
And they weren't a real contender. Like, when we look at all the teams, we say, like, the Chiefs, because they have Mahomes. We say the Bucks with Brady, Packers, Rodgers, you know, Josh Allen with the Bills. It's all, we're looking at the quarterback for the most part. If your best player is a running back, can we really take you seriously as a Super Bowl contender? And that's with all due respect. It's just the way the NFL has kind of moved and evolved.
I don't think they're a Super Bowl team, but they've won 9 of their last 12. This is a team that started 0-3.
They did.
And teams that start 0-3 do not go to the Super Bowl. I know the Cowboys did one of their championship runs. They started 0-2, but that's when Emmitt was holding out. I want to say maybe that was the 96 season. So there's usually extenuating circumstances why you would still make it. But and I know, and part of the problem, Ty, is that division. Like, nobody takes anybody seriously. In the AFC South, right? That's the way it works when you're taking on Jacksonville twice and Houston twice. But they've beaten some good teams. They've won on the road.
Had that big win against the Patriots.
But can they beat the Chiefs in KC?
It's hard to envision that. Now, if this were the, what was that, 2017 version of Carson Wentz before the injuries, when he was the clear-cut favorite to win the MVP, if they still had that guy, then maybe. I just don't know that now, like you said, you know, they're going to be able to beat Buffalo and Kansas City. And then the Bengals all of a sudden.
I can see them being Buffalo. And I'm not trying to be a Buffalo hater. I don't want to get jumped on by Bills Mafia. But that team's a little, you know, they still have to prove something. So could I see the Colts, you know, winning in Buffalo? Yeah, I could see that. Yeah. I can't see them winning in Kansas City.
Just to wrap up the MVP portion of this, Rodgers, if he does win it, would be the first. Well, let's see if you remember this. Actually, I'm going to turn this into a throw-you-on-the-spot trivia question. Mm-hmm. The last player in the NFL to win back-to-back MVPs.
Hmm. Are we going back a ways here, or is it fairly recent?
Fairly recent.
Because the easy one would be Brady, but I have a feeling it's not.
Fairly recent. I'll give you that hint. It's happened in the last 20 years.
So is it Manning?
It was Peyton Manning back in 2008 and 2009. How about this for a stat?
He's a nozzle, but he is a great, great quarterback.
How about this for a stat? Just real quick. Everyone knows I love Aaron Rodgers. He hasn't thrown an interception since week 10. Since then, 44 different players have thrown interceptions. 150 total have been thrown since Aaron Rodgers last threw a pick. That guy's unbelievable.
No, he is a terrific. I mean, like I said, I've had my differences with his opinions on some things.
Of course.
But you cannot – he forever, Ty, and I'm showing my age, I've always felt that the greatest quarterback that I ever saw was John Elway. when you consider his mobility, his arm strength, and the lack of really talented players around him. I mean, he didn't have a great player around him until he had Davis late in his career. But Rodgers is right there, if not better. Just how consistent he's been. And they said, well, Don, what about Tom Brady? I think Rodgers is better.
You're telling me if
Aaron Rodgers wasn't on New England, he wouldn't win those championships
too? Exactly. With Belichick, with those defenses, I'm totally with you, Don. Just to run through some other quick headlines after week 16 in the NFL. I don't know if you saw this, Don, but the Pats, a couple of weeks ago, were well on their way to wrapping up the AFC East. Mm-hmm. But since then, they've lost back-to-back losses to the Colts and Bills. So now they're tied with Buffalo, and they lose the tiebreaker. So they're actually in second place in that division. So I'm sure that fresh off of what's been a frustrating last couple of weeks, Bill Belichick had all the time in the world to be asked this question during his press conference.
Hi, football aside, sorry, but I'm doing a story about New Year's resolutions, and I was just wondering if you had any you wanted to share with your fans and our readers?
Yeah, no, not right now.
Okay, thanks.
Don, I almost respect having that gall to ask that question there.
It takes a lot of guts to do what she did, and she should be applauded for it. And I saw some things on Twitter, Ty, like people are like, you've got to tell your boss, forget you, I'm not going to do that. We don't know who this woman is. Like, I love how the majority of people are not able to tell their boss, go scratch. The boss tells you to do something, you do it. And she went out there and she did it. Now, it's foolhardy, but what happens a lot, Ty, is you get sent to these assignments. She may not know Bill Belichick is Bill Belichick. It might be, hey, she might have been a writer for some kind of Boston paper, and they were doing something. Just go out to the Patriot game and ask him. It was a home game for New England, so she didn't have to travel and ask him that question. She doesn't know any better. That's probably what went down. Yeah. I think anybody logical person would not have asked that question after a loss. She just didn't feel like she could tell her boss no.
And look, I'm not even sure you could ask that question after a win, knowing Bill Belichick.
Well, my quick story is I'm working at Sports Phone. This is going back early 90s. And for $15, I'd make $15, go cover like a net game or a devil game because I was from New Jersey. So just go to the Meadowlands and cover. And the Devils are playing the Blues. So I cover the Devils. I go into the room and I'm like, they're playing the Blues. I'm going to go into the Blues locker room and I'm going to, see Brett Hull. One of the great players in the league, future Hall of Famer. And I'll ask him a couple of questions. So I go in and he's sitting in the corner. This is 30 years ago. Sitting in the corner and just destroying the organization. We're poorly coached. Our GM doesn't know what he's doing. I'm tired of being here. I'm tired of losing. And he's just going, nobody's asking me any questions. We're just all sitting there with our microphones and our mouths open like, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening. And then he'd slow down. And then the thing to do is we'll ask him a question about what he's saying. So keep it going. I mean, I was able to make tons of money on this sound because all these St. Louis stations were calling me up to get the sound because he just out of nowhere. This Ty just blanking the organization left and right, destroying them. And there's a reporter, I won't mention his name, right in the middle of this diatribe. He goes, so Brett, you got the Islanders tomorrow at the Coliseum. What do you think?
Read the room, sir.
And classic Brett Hull, that without missing a beat, looks at the reporter and goes, reporter, stringer, basically, and goes, what does it matter what happens to the Islanders? I just told you, we're awful. We're terribly run. We're awfully coached. We're going to go, and we're going to get destroyed on the Islanders. So he didn't derail him. But we're all like, oh, my God, they got this great stuff, and you're changing the subject? What are you changing the subject for? But you know what? Brett was too smart to let the subject change. He still had plenty left to say, so he wasn't derailed, thank God. But that's kind of what happens sometimes is that you're sent out to be asked certain questions. That was always the big thing. Can you get us preview? That was probably what happened. That stringer was like, can you get us preview for the Islander game? And congratulations to Ty. He is now past the 2,500. And now currently stands at 2,554. So
we're making a lot of progress, my friend. Thank you. Thank you, Don. What a guy you are. Are you ready for what I would argue is the greatest soundbite from the weekend?
Okay. Let's listen. I'm ready.
All right. The Panthers were once in the playoff hunt.
Oh, sure.
But since then, they've lost five straight games. And here is Matt Rhule when analyzing what's going on in Carolina.
I believe it's 1,000% working. I just know no one can see it, and I apologize. I tell our team all the time, it took Jay-Z like 7 years. it took him 7 years. He had to start his own agency to become famous, to become an overnight sensation. Like, it takes time.
Wow.
Wow. I didn't know he had it in him.
Matt Rhule.
Wow.
Listen, man. Like, I understand it's tough losing your starting quarterback and your starting running back. But you're out here comparing yourself to Jay-Z, who at 25 years old was on albums with Big Daddy Kane and then 2 years later dropped one of the all-time hip-hop albums ever. That's a little bold, my friend. That's a little bold.
Well, he believes in what he's doing. And I get it, because you have to have confidence in life in order to be successful. But it's been absolute mess in Carolina. And you're right. That was a team that they're ready to take the next step. They thought they had their quarterback. They gave the fifth-year option to Sam. It's been a disaster. Now, Sam was hurt, but he was not playing well. And now it's going to be just another lost season for Carolina. And Matt Rhule does not look like the gem that everybody thought he was coming out of college. But you got to have confidence. But, Ty, I get when I always hate that. What he's saying is you're not educated enough to see the progress. Only we can see it.
Doesn't it kind of remind you of Joe Judge saying that a few weeks ago? We're building the foundation. It's not that I'm talking fast. You're just listening slow. That's basically what these head coaches are saying. Like, it's a dumpster fire. We know what's happening. It's about wins and losses, and they've been a disaster. As I mentioned, losing five straight games. It's not really working, Matt. Like, we get what you're trying to sell us, but come on, dude. We're a lot smarter than that. And then you're going to go compare yourself to Jay-Z, which I can't get over.
Well, he's a fan.
Big Jay-Z guy.
Now, I got to tell you, I'm assuming you're a big Jay-Z fan.
I am.
I'm not a big hip-hop guy, and the stuff I like is old school, but I do acknowledge the greatness of Jay-Z. I don't know if you had a chance. It's on HBO. It runs on a loop. You'll find it somewhere. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony. And in Cleveland, I guess it was about a month ago, and it's been on HBO, and Dave Chappelle inducts Jay-Z. It's one of the great speeches of all time.
I heard about it. I haven't seen it yet, but I did hear about Chappelle doing that, and it's definitely something I got to go back and watch.
They get the greatest people, because it was him. It was Paul McCartney inducting Foo Fighters. Good stuff.
That's awesome.
I mean, I don't really have a lot of respect for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It seems like it's... Whoever gets in, I disagree with some of the people and some of the artists that are in there, but you still have to respect the fact that they got there, and Chappelle did a tremendous job, because Chappelle hit all the right notes, because it goes beyond just his musicianship or even his business, just what he meant to the culture and to the African-American community, and he hit every note, Chappelle, in only the way that Dave can do it.
So when Matt Rhule gets inducted into the Hall of Fame, who's introducing him, since he's comparing himself to Jay-Z? You gotta wonder.
Joe Judge.
Yeah, Joe Judge will be inducted.
You can't see it. It's happening.
No, Dave Gettleman will induct him.
Dave Gettleman.
The ties to Carolina.
I promise you. You can't see that. The sky is actually not falling. All right, so we go from the greatest soundbite to the greatest performance of the weekend. That would come courtesy of Joe Burrow, who passed for 525 yards. That's the fourth most in NFL history, four touchdowns, but for some odd reason that we can't figure out, still wasn't good enough to have a QBR higher than that of Zach Wilson.
Right.
This drew a lot of praise from Dan Orlovsky on First Take this afternoon.
Joe Burrow's a top five quarterback in the NFL, absolutely. There is not a single quarterback under the age of 25 that I would take over Joe Burrow. Mm. I think he's that special of a player. The quarterback that I would put into the conversation for that five spot is probably Josh Allen. Yes, I said Justin Herbert last week is like a 5.5 type of player. Josh Allen is a guy that deserves to be into that conversation.
Bro, you're definitely not going to be able to go back to Buffalo, bro. Like, wasn't there a time...
I rock with Buffalo.
Wasn't there a time where people in Buffalo were sending you, like, capes and blankets and tables to jump on NFL
absolutely.
Live?
Absolutely.
Oh, they're going to take all that stuff.
No. My job is to be in the moment.
In the moment. What a game for Joe Burrow, man. That was a sensational performance. And it just goes to show you, Don, as much as we like to, and I say we, just, creating like a generic blanket, we like to make excuses for Daniel Jones and to some degree Zach Wilson, though it's a little premature, not having an offensive line, you know, not having enough weapons. You kind of see it early with these young quarterbacks. When they've got something special, we see flashes.
You got to see flashes, and nobody's saying that Daniel Jones has to be Burrow. I had this argument with Sam Darnold, and I ended up being wrong because it looks like Sam just does not have it, although there's still time, I guess, for that to change, is that nobody's asking these quarterbacks like Daniel Jones that he has to be the best quarterback in the NFL. So maybe there'll be a world where the best quarterback is Joe Burrow, and the second best is Justin Herbert, and after Rodgers and Brady and Roethlisberger and Mahomes are gone. But maybe you'll be like Eli was, maybe the seventh or eighth best quarterback, but win. But you're not even showing us that. But look at this eclectic list. Top five passing games of all time in NFL history. Joe Burrow, as you mentioned, fourth all time with 525 yards passing. There's a tie for fifth. Boomer Esiason in 1996 and Ben Roethlisberger in 2014 threw for 522. Warren Moon and Matt Schaub are tied for second.
Wow.
527. Moon did it in 1990. Matt Schaub did it in 2012. Most ever in one game. And it's not so shocking, the name, because it's a Hall of Famer. But when it was done, Norm Van Brocklin, 554 yards passing in 1951.
Matt Schaub, wow.
Jared Goff had a 517-yard passing game in 2019. Just trying to think of like a there's no real. Eli had 510 in 2012. That was that shootout against the Saints and they lost.
Oh, I remember that. Did that go to overtime?
I believe so.
I believe that was that. I remember that game.
And the only other Giant to throw for 500 yards in a game was Phil Sims. He threw for 513 against Cincinnati in 85. They lost that game. So the two Giants that threw for over 500 yards in the game both lost.
So the key is don't throw for a lot of yards.
Yeah.
That's the key. All right, we'll finish off with an NBA COVID update. Per Adrian Wojnarowski, vaccinated players and coaches can now clear quarantine after 6 days if COVID testing data shows they are no longer at risk to be infectious. This was an agreement between the league and the PA, and it comes at a time where players are testing positive and heading into quarantine at an unprecedented rate.
What was the quarantine
before? I believe it was 10 days.
Okay.
So they've now gone from 10 to 6. 172 players and coaches have entered COVID protocols in the past 2 weeks, including a single-day high of 27 on Sunday. So this is expected to be effective immediately. On that note, Steve Nash came out today and said that Durant and Irving remain in health and safety protocols ahead of tonight's game in LA against the Clippers. But there is a good chance we will see KD out of protocol when the team is back in Brooklyn this week. The Nets coming off that near collapse on Christmas Day against the Lakers where they almost blew a 20-point lead. But thanks to Nick Claxton and James Harden, they were able to salvage that game. 122-115 was the final score. Here was Nash, though, when asked about a timeline for Kyrie Irving once he is cleared.
Yeah, it's hard to say, but I would say it's probably somewhere between a week and 2 weeks. You know, he's obviously been isolating, so that kind of puts another layer to the ramp up. It's not like he's been working out. So, you know, probably I'd imagine it's going to be closer to 2 weeks once he comes out of protocol. So we'll just have to, you know, see how it goes, though, because we have to kind of evaluate him from – physical and performance standpoint, and then basketball standpoint as well.
So there you have it.
Well, trying to get closer and closer to this being over. It doesn't seem like it. It doesn't feel like it's close when you're seeing all these positive tests. But you know, just hopefully people stay out of the hospital and don't die. Those are the two figures that I care the most about. I mean, we had to go 4 months without sports back in 2020. I would rather have that than to see it spike in, you know, hospitalizations and deaths. That's the main thing.
Amen to that, Donnie. That'll conclude tonight's CNN.
That was good. Great job, Ty.
Thank you, man. We got the followers up to 2583, so we blew past that goal of yours.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.